Hi, this is Dan Lynch. Join me for Floss Weekly, where I'll be joined by guest host Aaron Newcomb, and our guest project is Image Factory, a way of building virtual machines and targeting any cloud platform. So join us next, because you don't want to miss it.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Floss Weekly is provided by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com.
This is Floss Weekly number 231, recorded Wednesday, October the 31st, 2012. Image Factory. Hello and welcome to Floss Weekly, the show about free Libre open source software. My name is Dan Lynch and I'm your host for this week. Our regular host, Randall Schwartz, is away in the Mediterranean right now, but I am joined by Aaron Newcomb. Aaron, how are you doing?
Good, good. Good to see you again, Dan.
Yeah, it's good to see you too. And I'm glad you guys are all safe over there on the West Coast, because there's some crazy stuff going on in the States right now. And I'd like to wish everybody who watches and listens to Twit our best wishes, really. I mean, I hope everyone's okay and staying safe out there.
Yeah, absolutely. Our thoughts go out to everybody on the East Coast that's dealing with the Superstorm, as they call it, Superstorm Sandy. I know I was talking to a coworker this morning that said, I said, hey, how's this project coming? And he said, I have no power or electricity or water. It's going to take me a little bit to get this done. So obviously, I said, no problem. Just glad you're safe. But yeah, definitely our thoughts go out to everybody. And I think we're commiserating here in the Bay Area. It seems a little bit cloudy and rainy today. So.
Mm-hmm. Okay, then. So today we've got Image Factory is our guest project, and we're going to be joined by Steve Lawrence and Ian McLeod from the project. And Image Factory is a tool for building your virtual appliances, your virtual machines, if you like, but targeting them at different cloud providers. They give you all the tools so you can build your image, and they build it up to a certain kind of level and then target it at likes of EC2, obviously, Rackspace, all these other kind of cloud providers. So it sounds really interesting. Have you heard anything about it before, Aaron?
I have not, outside of the Aeolus. We talked about Aeolus, 10 episodes ago or something. It was back in the spring. So I know it's part of that effort, but I don't know a whole lot about it. It is an interesting area, though, just because, you know, obviously cloud is so dominant right now. And anytime you get above, you know, say 20 images or so that you have to manage, or if you're rolling out a new project and you know you're going to need 20, 30 images up in the cloud, I think any kind of software like that that can help in that deployment effort is going to be great. So I'm anxious to hear what they have to say.
Okay, so let's go ahead and bring on our guests. We have Steve Lawrence and Ian McLeod. How are you doing, guys?
Great.
Good. Thanks for having us on.
Excellent. So where are you speaking to us from right now?
I'm in Chicago.
And okay. I'm also just outside of Chicago.
Oh, excellent. Okay. So I would obviously, you guys are not affected by the current hurricane over there. So I'm glad you're keeping safe. Make sure everyone keeps safe over there. So we're here to talk about Image Factory. So I don't know who wants to start us off, but can you give us an idea and an overview of what Image Factory is and how it works? Who wants to kick us off?
Sure, I can field that initially. Image Factory is a tool for building operating system images to be pushed to cloud providers, with a fairly broad definition of what a cloud provider is. So EC2, Rackspace, OpenStack, these are all clouds that people are probably familiar with. We also define things like vSphere and Red Hat's virtualization tool, RevM, as a cloud provider. So it's a tool that can build an image from scratch, from install media, modify it and customize it in a variety of ways, and then push it up to these providers in whatever format they require, which differs quite a bit between them. So that's in a nutshell what it does. It's meant to support... Sorry, go ahead.
No, carry on. I'm interrupting you there. Carry on.
No, it's part of a larger project called Aeolus, which does is a sort of broader cloud management scheme. That's also a Red Hat project.
Excellent. Okay. So what would be a comparable kind of thing that maybe our listeners might have heard of or seen? Or so, are there any comparable tools out there?
There are some similar tools. Appliance creation is a problem that has been around for a while. There are some tools that in the past have been used to create live CD images. There's another tool that's part of the Red Hat JBoss project that's called BoxGrinder that does something similar. Beyond that, I'm not really sure. There aren't a whole lot of things that seem to be designed to address this in the cloud context specifically, pushing in particular to the public cloud providers. It's a relatively new space.
Okay, so how did the project come about? What's the kind of problem you were trying to solve, and how was it born, if you like?
Well, so the Aeolus project, the larger project, is designed to be a management framework that's fairly cloud neutral. So it's meant to let you define images and collections of images and launch them to a variety of clouds without really locking you into any one specifically. So there's a variety of pieces to that. Image Factory is one of them. And Image Factory needed to be there in order to let you define an image and what's in it in a fairly cloud neutral way. But then build it and deploy it to a variety of clouds without having to worry about the underlying details. So it's part of a group of projects, group of elements that support the larger Aeolus and CloudForms project.
Mm-hmm. And what's your role within the project?
So I was originally the sole developer, the lead developer. The team has grown since then to be two people. So we're both basically the software developers for it.
Excellent. Okay. So there are some other things around that kind of do similar kind of things. So how does Image Factory kind of differentiate itself? Because creating appliances as a project is a problem that's been around for a little while. So what do you guys do differently to everyone else?
Well, so the main thing is that we make pervasive and essentially exclusive use of virtualization, and we use the native tools, the native installer and the native packaging tools in whatever our target is. So a lot of other tools in this space essentially operate in what you might call an offline mode. So you're running in a host environment. Within the host environment, you create some loopback file systems, you format them, and then within the host environment, you lay down a package set using tools within the host environment. This works reasonably well as long as there's not a huge difference between the environment that you're hosting in and the environment that you're trying to create. So, for example, we ran into problems with tools that do it this way when trying to build older images with newer versions of Fedora or RHEL. You end up with mismatches in the way the package database works, in the way that some of the meta packaging works. And again, the greater the difference there, the more issues you have. So we actually operate in a completely different way. We use the native installation tools, and we run them within a virtual machine, and then we capture the output. Beyond that, another thing that I believe is unique to the way we do it is that we don't attempt to customize within the installation tool, whether it's Anaconda or Ubuntu's installer or Windows. We take a known, an input that is known to work reliably to install the baseline operating system. And then we finish that. And when we're done, we launch it again as sort of a full-fledged version of the guest. And then we do the customization from there, which gives us a much better environment to do error detection and be able to provide feedback. So that, in essence, is what makes Image Factory different.
I need to go into that last part a little bit more and maybe get a little bit more clarity. You start with, you build the system yourself. Are you like building it up to a certain point and then allowing for customization? So you've got the basic level, so you know it'll work on EC2, for example. You know that because you've done the install up to a certain point, and then you allow the user to start from there and then add packages and things like that. Is that basically what you're doing?
That's roughly correct. We build it in a local KVM guest using the native install media up to a very minimal point, just enough that we can launch it again as a full guest and SSH into it. When we do that, we launch the full-fledged operating system, and we do further customization, again, as a KVM guest locally. Theoretically, we could use other virtualization tools, but right now we use KVM because it's what's most easily natively available on Linux, which is our primary platform.
Yeah.
And once we've done both of those things, created a minimal install and then customized it based on what people have asked us to do, then we shut it down and we have the image is in a very well understood form on KVM, and then we transform it as necessary to push it up to various cloud providers. So people who are familiar with EC2 might know about the bundling process. We do that. We flatten it. For things like RevM or vSphere, we may change the disk image format, things of that nature.
Right, right. Is this meant
Maybe just a point to clarify there, too. We're bringing it up to what you would call just enough OS, mainly not as a common denominator for the clouds themselves, but as a means to make sure that we don't run into issues just at the very outset of trying to install this base image or try to create this base image. So the just enough OS approach, you know, gets rid of a lot of variables before you actually go into customization.
Right.
We want to take that out as one of the problem aspects, you know, before you even get to customization.
Right. So things like kernel drivers or settings, things that you might have to tune, or everyone might have to tune when they're setting up, for example, an EC2 VM. You've done that base work already, so you know you've got the right versions of various drivers or whatever that you need, the right version of a kernel, for example, to make sure that you have that baseline, right?
That's part of it, yeah. And the other issue is, I mean, a lot of the installation tools like Anaconda for Fedora and Red Hat Enterprise Linux, they do let you do some of this customization, but it's a very difficult environment to do error detection in. You essentially can look for one of two things. If it encounters an error, it reports that back interactively to you, but that's very difficult to capture programmatically. So you're left, when running it in a VM as we do, you can look for either it shut down, which indicates that it finished correctly, or you have some sort of timeout. There's no real way to get detailed information back when there's a failure. So we do, in the case of Anaconda, we have kickstart files that we know work to create minimal installs all the time. And we do that. And then we launch them as full-fledged guests, which we can access via SSH. And that's a much easier environment to then do error detection. And if people have, you know, fat-fingered the list of repositories, or they've misspelled a package name, or their customization scripts don't work, they produce an error, those are all things that are much easier for us to provide feedback on in error correction and detection if we're running in a full-fledged guest.
This might be a good time also to sort of review, you know, the process and sort of the concepts that we use with an image factory. So what we're talking about right now in terms of building an image, we're talking about in terms of an upload image. There are clouds that, like EC2, supports us actually building our own local image and then pushing it up into the cloud. But there's also they also have a mode where you can snapshot something that's already up in the cloud. And then Rackspace also works in that way where you can only snapshot. So we have two modes there where you can build one locally, you can snapshot it in the cloud, and then do your customizations that you need in order to make it your web server or, you know, some sort of application server or whatever you want to use it for. Then there's also our process. And in the case of the upload style builds, we use all three parts of this process, which is to build what's called a base image, and that's the basic with all of your custom packages type image that you have created. And then there's a target image, which is actually customized for that cloud specific format. So, you know, the target image would be for EC2, RevM, vSphere, Rackspace, you know, OpenStack. And then from the target image, you would push that up, and that would create what we call a provider image. And that would be, you know, you push it up to EC2's, you know, US East 1 or US West 1, or, you know, you have a different data center for RevM or vSphere. Those are the providers that we're pushing those images into. So that's just a, you know, sort of an overview of the process and the terms that we use with an image factory.
Okay. And what I'm just trying to get, if I wanted to use this, do I need, because we talked about before, maybe we should talk about this a little bit, the relationship with Aeolus, and we've had them on the show before. What's the relationship? This is one module, basically, of that whole package, right?
Yeah, so our relationship with Aeolus is mostly infrastructure. You know, we act sort of like what Delta Cloud acts like with Aeolus, in that we provide infrastructure to make them more cloud independent, cloud agnostic. So whereas Delta Cloud provides interface for interacting with instances on the cloud, we offer a component where we can create images that can then be pushed to the cloud so that ALS Conductor, as an example, that's the web UI that is administrative, does the administrative actions. They can call to us and actually create those images and have them pushed up. They don't have to deal with any of the specifics of, you know, each of the different types of clouds.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And this is available in Fedora only at this point? Or can you get it on Red Hat as well?
It can run on both Fedora and RHEL. And in fact, it can probably run in other Linux environments as well, although we don't test extensively in those.
Okay. I was just looking at the website, on the ALS website, when you go to get it, you know, it basically just has a yum command to install.
Oh, yeah, I'm sorry. I thought you were asking about the factory specifically. And
we should do both, right? So ALS looks like it's right now only in Fedora, at least that's the way you get it. But Image Factory, I could download those. Do you have binaries, for example, available for Ubuntu or any of the other distributions?
It's certainly easiest to run it on Fedora right now. There's no reason why it shouldn't run if you install it from source or install it from Python packages on something like Ubuntu. And in fact, it's our goal to make that a little bit easier, actually package it up and get it formally available. But right now, the easiest environment to use Factory is Fedora, and the same is fair to say is true for ALS as well.
Mm-hmm. So this is one part of ALS. Is what's the status of the software? Is it production? Have you done a major version release, or is it still kind of in beta?
So yeah, go ahead, Ian.
We've done a release earlier this year of the overall stack, which is the product is called CloudForms, and that is in production. That's available. We've done quite a bit of development since then in the last 6 to 8 months, and that's what I would call in sort of alpha beta testing at the moment. The upstream project is,
and that's for version 2 of Image Factory.
Unmute yourself, Dan. We've got Dan on mute, I think. That's okay. He'll come back to us in a minute.
Hello? Can you hear me?
There we go.
Hello. Sorry about that. I wasn't actually muted. I don't know what's going on there. So one thing I was curious about, guys, we talked about the status of it in the production stages. Is anybody outside Red Hat using this right now? If so, who's using it and what kind of things are they doing with it?
I'm afraid to say I'm not entirely sure. We know that the overall product is in use. We have some early customers, on the product side of things. One of the things we've done over the last few months, the project originated as part of ALS and a larger software stack. We've taken some steps over the last few months in the upstream project to make it easier to use it standalone. So we've built up a command line interface that's a little more user-friendly. Prior to that, it was really only run as a REST service to be used by the web admin side of ALS. So,
Okay, excellent. And how many people are working on this? How big's your team? Is it all Red Hat developers right now, people who are working at Red Hat, or do you get outside contributions? Is that something you look into in future?
Well, really, it's just the two of us at the moment. And yeah, we're absolutely open to any sort of outside contribution. There's a number of areas that we're looking to, progress on, more support for different operating systems, both, you know, as where Image Factory is run and what kind of guests we can create, what kind of images we can create. There's so much, actually. It's such a young project that we would take just about any help that anyone could provide, you know, even anything like cleaning up the design on the website, right? I mean, these are things that mm-hmm. take time, and you know, it's just the two of us, and we honestly don't have the time to do it all.
Mm. Excellent. Yeah, I mean, of course, it's a big undertaking when you're trying to get a project off the ground. So, what have you got, like a GitHub repo or anything like that? Is this available? How could people get involved if they want to?
We are on GitHub, and actually, mm-hmm. Image Factory is an upstream project first. So it's not like there's a bunch of stuff, you know, in a private repository somewhere that, you know, eventually makes it into the upstream project. Right now, it's all upstream first. So you can find us at GitHub, ALS Project, Image Factory. If you go to imagefact.org, of course, you know, we point you to all those wonderful ways to get in contact with us. We're on Twitter and Facebook and, you know, Google Plus and all that kind of stuff. So if you're interested in, you know, get involved, reach out to us in one of those ways.
Great. Okay. So we encourage people to do that. So we talked a little bit about, Aaron was saying about installing it. You've got a yum command on your website, but what kind of requirements are there for me to install this maybe in hardware and software and so on?
Well, we make heavy use of libvirt and libguestfs. So that's, those are probably two of the biggest requirements in terms of software. And the nature of what we're doing in terms of virtual machines requires, if you want any sort of, you know, good timeline for building an image, you should really be doing it on bare metal at this point until nested virtualization becomes more widely adopted. Other than that, Ian, what else am I missing here in terms of requirements?
No, I think you hit the main points. I mean, depending on which cloud you want to build for, there are bindings that you need to install. Those are part of our RPM dependencies right now. So there's a project called Botto that we use to talk to EC2. There's a comparable project for talking to Rackspace, and there are some bindings also for vSphere, you know, vCenter and RevM. So those are all, you don't need those unless you want to build for those particular clouds. But those are some of the other things we require. Main thing is that to do upload builds, you really need to be running on bare metal. So if you can't really test it in a virtual machine effectively.
And one thing I'll say, too, is, you know, Ian mentioned the bindings for specific clouds. We do offer a plug-in style interface so that, you know, if all you want to do is build for EC2, you could just install the Image Factory core and then the plugins for whatever OSs you want to install and just that cloud. But it also means that, you know, people that are very knowledgeable about specific clouds or specific OSs can contribute by creating plugins that are independent of the project and distributing, you know, them independently of Image Factory so that more people could make use of Image Factory and, you know, create operating system images for whatever cloud's available.
I mean, yeah, that's a good point, actually, because you're talking about you can target a lot of different cloud providers. Does that create challenges for you? Because I imagine, obviously, there are different requirements for each one. Those could change maybe outside of your control. So what are the kind of challenges for you guys in working with so many different targets, if you like?
So, I mean, the biggest challenge, we need to have some way to communicate with it. At the moment, we found the project is based in Python. It's written in Python. There have generally been language bindings available for us to talk to the APIs that these clouds provide. Each cloud is different in the format that it expects the image to be in, EC2 probably being the most challenging. So there's various transformations that we need to do when you're doing an upload style image. As we mentioned a little bit earlier, some of the public clouds simply don't support uploading arbitrary content as a sort of fully baked image. So the other thing we're dependent on is a relationship with those providers to have them give us the minimal images, the sort of starter images that we then log into and modify in a similar way that we do if they're local. So we have that on EC2 for both RHEL and Fedora. We have some of that on Rackspace. And, you know, we're in the early stages of trying to arrange that kind of thing on some of the other public clouds.
And do things, I mean, I know you're in the early stages right now, but do things ever change on their end that kind of can break things for you and cause problems? Because I'm just thinking that you're working with a proprietary system here on the other end in some cases, which you don't have, you know, as much control over. Does that ever cause you any kind of problems so far?
I mean, we've had some issues. For example, vSphere has introduced new features over the 3, 4, and 5 version timeframes that have changed the way that we need to specify the virtual machine that we're uploading to. There have been some changes on EC2 that have actually, frankly, made life easier for us. It used to be the case that EC2 images were always separated into a distinct kernel image, RAM disk image, and file system image. And you had to make sure that there was the appropriate versions of each available for the image you were trying to build. They have, in the last couple of years, I think it was about 18 months ago, actually, that they added this, something that essentially simulates the behavior of grub, on Linux-based images. So we can now build an image with its kernel and RAM disk in it, just as you would for bare metal or for other virtualization, and upload it as necessary. So some of those things have evolved.
Yeah, and I've got a burning question in my mind. I don't know if you'll be able to answer this, so feel free to say no comment if that's the answer.
But
I know that particularly in the case of Amazon, they use a lot of Red Hat products and so on. You guys are both kind of at Red Hat. Does that give you a maybe an easier relationship with Amazon in some way? Does that give you more access to some of their developers and engineers and so on to help you get your things going?
You know, we don't have any particularly special relationship with the people who manage the cloud side of Amazon. We have, as developers for Image Factory, we have not been intimately involved, for example, in the process of making RHEL available on Amazon, which it is, the enterprise product, their images available. But I would say, generally speaking about Amazon in particular, their APIs are pretty well documented. There's a fairly large community of use. So it hasn't really been necessary to have any kind of special access.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. Well, that was a very full answer, so I appreciate it. I wasn't sure these political matters, you know, you never know.
Sure. Hopefully I haven't gotten myself in trouble, I don't think.
Yeah. We're not going to see, like, a little hand appear from the side of your screen and grab you or something. One of the other things... Okay, so I'm curious about who's using this right now, and can you give us some kind of examples and so on of what kind of things people are using it for?
So one of the things in the larger project, the goal is to make it easier for people to create collections of image types that they can then launch in a coordinated fashion, and that's aided by some other elements of the ALS project. So I think we use it certainly for primarily for building utility images of Fedora and Red Hat, Enterprise Linux. We've used it for we actually use our own images ourselves for some of the, for example, to upload an EBS style image, we have to launch a utility image in Amazon, which we've created using our own tooling. In terms of wider community of usage, again, we're in early days, so I'm not entirely sure what some other people have been doing with it.
Okay, excellent. Yeah, I mean, with a young project, it's always hard to kind of tell these things. So I just expect that will develop as you kind of go along. We've been through a few of the providers that you support. Are there any other providers that maybe you'd want to add in future, or you're looking to add, or anyone's made a request for anything like?
Well, so we're certainly interested in adding some more public cloud providers. The Rackspace and EC2 are the two primary ones right now, and they're quite prominent, and EC2 is very prominent. So there are a number of other clouds that are supported by another element of the ALS project, the Delta Cloud project, which is a cloud-neutral API where it talks to different back-end provider clouds but presents a unified REST interface in front of them. Some of the clouds, although not all of them, provide a very simple sort of image snapshotting feature that's simple enough that it can be abstracted away and exposed via Delta Cloud. So another thing we'd like to do is for those providers that allow that, we should be able to add support for those, where you, instead of talking to the provider through its own binding, which is what we do right now for all of them, we would talk through Delta Cloud, use Delta Cloud's ability to execute a simple image snapshot. So that's one of the big ones on our roadmap.
Mm-hmm. And one that came to my mind was actually, I have to confess, from meeting the guys at a Red Hat conference, is Nimbula, which is some of the guys who were involved in EC2 in the early days. And they've built their own cloud system that's API compatible, I believe. So have you ever looked at that? And I'm assuming if it's API compatible, then you could build an image using your EC2 kind of model and then ship it over.
Yeah, I'm sorry, is that Open Nebula you're talking about?
Nimbula, they're called. Is the
name Nimbula. Okay, no.
Sorry.
Yeah, anything that's API compatible with EC2, particularly if it's known to work with the Bato Python binding, which is what we use, it should be a pretty simple matter, to push to it using essentially unmodified or lightly modified version of what we currently do for EC2.
Mm-hmm. Excellent.
Is that a public cloud, or is it a private? Is it meant to be sort of an on-premise cloud that uses the EC2 API?
I believe, I don't want to get too far off the topic, but I believe from talking to the guys at Nimbula, they've built their own system, and it has the ability for public cloud and private clouds and moving images between them, and actually moving images from EC2 to Nimbula. That's the kind of one of the big selling points, is people who want to bring their cloud infrastructure in-house, which some people might want to do with private cloud. They can do that through through something like Nimbula, but I'm not here to advertise them, so I better be careful.
Okay.
All right, and so meanwhile, back at the subject, I'm curious about the kind of the tools that you offer for developers and stuff. So what kind of stuff do you have for people to use this kind of stuff right now? So when I download Image Factory, what do I get and what do I do with it?
Well, you're going to get, basically the source tree, and our API is all REST at this point. So, you could script against the CLI, if that works out better for you. But, generally, that's the support is REST. And both interfaces are able to do the same, they're feature equivalent. So.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. Okay. I was just going to say, you've got... obviously it's a young project. You've got a few people using this right now. So what kind of things have you got in mind for expansion in way of tools and so on? What would you like to add to your tool set that you can give to engineers and developers?
Well, one thing that I was thinking about when you were talking about Nimbula is the ability to move images off of EC2. So one of the things that we do want to work on is importing of images and being able to, take an image that you have somewhere else, build a base and target image for other clouds, and then be able to push them up to different providers.
Yeah, I was just going to ask about that. I mean, is that something that you'd have to work in conjunction with Image Warehouse on? Would that be a combined effort, or would that be... Because I think that a lot of people right now don't necessarily want to have all their eggs in one basket, right? I mean, the wise thing would be to have kind of a backup plan or a way to cut over to somebody else's public cloud offering. If you're on EC2, you might want to have a backup plan that says, look, we can migrate all this stuff very quickly to Rackspace, for example, if we have to.
Right.
So
go ahead, Sue. Well, what I was going to say real quickly is that the tool thus far, what it allows you to do is have one representation of an image that you can push to all those different providers so that you don't have all of your eggs in one basket. The importing would be, if you have existing images already that you, don't want to go through the effort of trying to represent as a template, to be able to import them into the system in a real easy manner. That's really the point of Image Factory, is to avoid that cloud lock and be able to, represent it once and be able to push it everywhere.
Right, right. And what about private cloud? Are there people? I mean, we talked a little bit about the software, the Nimbula software, things like that. But really, what I think this is geared towards is public cloud. But what about private cloud? People that want to do their own in-house cloud deployments. Is the software equally well there? And I know you said as long as it's like EC2 compliant, it wouldn't be a problem.
Well, actually, we have support for, first of all, private cloud in the sense of being able to push to just any vSphere instance, ESX, vSphere, VMware, whatever you want to call it, or Red Hat's virtualization solution, RevM. Those have been supported from essentially the beginning. We also have support for the OpenStack project, which is grew out of the Rackspace public cloud initially, but is in fact a private cloud solution that you can push to. So that's definitely it's we already support it, and it's intended to be a target, a growing target going forward.
Okay, good. What about the another thing that you mentioned in the notes as we were talking is the Oz project? What's the relationship there?
Oz is actually a library or tool set that we use for to enable our initial image creation and customization. So it started, it's a project, the lead developer is a guy named Chris LaLancet. And it was originally a tool to build base minimal operating systems, minimal versions of a very large collection of operating systems in virtual machines. And in fact, it still does that for us. And then it also, we've added support to then customize them. So it is the engine for at least for the OSs that we currently support, that builds and customizes the local virtual machine that forms the basis of our images. Image Factory drives that through OWASP. And then there's the content within Image Factory itself has all of the knowledge, essentially, to transform these images and upload them to the target clouds. So OWASP is a pretty key infrastructural component for us, at least for the OSs that we support at the moment, Fedora and RHEL.
What, I mean, we've had so many guests on talking about cloud. A lot of them have been cloud management platforms like Scalar. Aeolus is another good example of cloud management. And I think that we've had at least one. I was trying to find it, but I couldn't find it as we were talking. But I think there's at least one other project we've had on that deals with building images for cloud. I just want to kind of get your take on cloud in general as far as where things are going. I mean, a lot of people see this as basically an iteration, a way to consolidate certainly from the server side, but also from the whole infrastructure side, being able to consolidate your cloud. What's your take on where the cloud is going? I mean, is this what are we going to see in the next 5 to 10 years? If you guys look out into your crystal ball, do you think that that we've reached the peak of where cloud is going to be, or is there a lot more things that are going to happen down the road?
Well, that's maybe above my pay grade, but I would say no. I mean, I think it's interesting. We've, you know, one of our fundamental design decisions was to encourage people to rethink the images that they were using, build images from the ground up for use in the cloud. So that's why importing, for example, was not a primary focus in the early part of the project. We did that because we thought that in order to really leverage these tools, people had to think in terms of images that they launched that were perhaps short-lived, perhaps were stateless, things like that. And I think there's still quite a bit, it seems like there's quite a bit of evolution going on in that space. People coming to terms with how to build applications as a collection of images that may come and go, a collection of instances that may come and go, separating state out, not even necessarily into like a database server, but maybe into simply a state service, something like S3 or you know, something similar to that. My personal impression is that that process is still very much ongoing, that people are learning how to deploy and build multi-tier applications in that way. Whereas in the, you know, even 5 years ago, it was you would get a collection of physical servers, you'd spend a great deal of time customizing them. You might lose some of the details of how that happened. You had a lot invested in, you know, what uniquely went into those physical systems. And we're hoping to get I think people are hoping to get away from that in cloud.
So an abstraction from all of the physical, a true abstraction, let's say, from all the physical stuff. Right now there is abstraction. In other words, like if you're using EC2, you don't know, for example, what brand of disk drive your data is sitting on and things like that. But you think it'll go even a level higher than that, where you just have everything's generic and you don't even care anymore.
I think that's certainly the promise of it. That's the hope. Yeah, it's certainly not easy. It's much. It's quite a bit easier to do whatever local customization you need and be comfortable with it, back it up, and have that be the end of it. But the promise is in terms of being able to migrate, being able to scale. If you can define things very abstractly, as a collection of images that collaborate, and maybe you don't even know where they're running, or maybe they move back and forth. That seems to me to be quite a powerful possibility.
Right.
And that's, of course, if you're still rooted in the infrastructure, you know, aspect of cloud. You know, we're seeing such a great move forward in the platform aspect of cloud with things like OpenShift and Heroku and, you know, Engine Yard and things like that. So I think, you know, we definitely have not hit the peak in terms of what cloud capabilities are. I think that there's still quite a bit of progress to be made, and, you know, there's a great future ahead.
Okay, guys, so we've talked a lot about Image Factory, but is there anything that we haven't covered that you'd like our listeners to know that we should really talk about?
I would just encourage people to come look at the website, join IRC, join the mailing list, and check it out.
Excellent. Okay, yeah, that's great. That sounds like we've almost covered everything. That's good. We like that. cool. All right, and so Randall's not here this week, as everyone will have realized, but I need to ask you his favorite questions, which he always asks, and I think I know some of the answers to this. So I'll ask you in turn. So Steve, we'll start with you, if that's okay. Vim or Emacs?
Vim.
Oh, okay. Randall won't like that one. Ian, same question?
Pass?
Okay, and the other one we always ask, I'll ask Steve first, is favorite scripting language?
I guess Python.
Okay, that's a good answer. I like that one. And Ian, same again?
It's going to be Python, I'm afraid.
Python, okay, that's good. Well, Randall's not here, so somewhere in the Mediterranean right now, he's probably screaming. But,
but never mind. He's not going to care. Actually, Steve, you're fairly new to open source software development, correct?
Yeah, it's correct. Most of my career has been in more of a closed environment. I've had a couple of dabblings here and there, but this is the first time I've been able to work on open source as a day-to-day responsibility. So mm-hmm. It's good. I really like, you know, I like the atmosphere at Red Hat, and I like, you know, what we're doing. I think that this is a good project to be on.
Okay, good, good. That's good to hear. Are you also new to open source tools, or were you a user of open source previous, just not contributing to open source projects?
I've been a user, you know, for a long time. I've cut my teeth on Slackware, the early days of Slackware. So
good. So you didn't have to necessarily make a transition like from Windows to Linux or Virtual Basic or something to Python. You actually were using those tools before.
Right.
Okay. Cool. Cool. Well, welcome to the open source community. We're glad to have you.
Yeah, definitely. And Ian, you're not so new to open source. You've been doing this a while.
No, I started using Linux in the sort of mid-late 90s and have made a career out of it. I was previously at VA Linux, and I've been in Red Hat for, I guess, going on 12 years now.
Excellent. Well, thank you very much for coming on and talking to us today, guys. We really appreciate it, and we wish you the best of luck. As you say, it's a relatively young project, so we look to the future to see great things from you guys, and we're all really excited. So thanks for coming on and joining us.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having
us
again.
No problem. No problem at all. So, a really interesting product there. What did you think, Aaron?
Well, all of these projects are interesting, and I really think it's a good sign that that the open source communities in general, this project happens to be sponsored by Red Hat, but it's all open source code. Mm-hmm. I just think it's great that the open source developers are actually jumping on the cloud. I want to say the cloud bandwagon. I mean, but that may be trivializing it a little bit too much. I mean, it's a huge opportunity. It's a huge area of interest right now for companies as they look for, you know, what's my next version of this particular software package, or what's my next version of the way that I run my business? How am I going to support that? And right now, they're all looking at cloud saying, hey, this sounds great, and there's a lot of work going on. So I just think it's really great that you know, we talk a lot about cloud on this show, because there's just so many projects in cloud going on right now. And, you know, of course, we want to make people aware of those. So it may sound like we're beating a dead horse sometimes. We're really not. I mean, there's just so many good projects out there. And I'm just excited. This one sounds really good. I mean, if I was, deploying a lot of images that had to be customized, you know, not stock images, but images that I was deploying to support mm-hmm. my business, this is definitely a project I would be looking at very seriously.
Yeah, and it really is a growing area. I was at a Red Hat conference actually last year where Jim Whitehurst, the CEO, joked that he can't give a speech these days or a keynote unless it includes the word cloud, or he's not allowed to get it through the legal department or whatever. So it really is growing right now. But do you think it's – I mean, we talked a little bit about the future of the cloud there, and it's good to see that the guys are kind of talking about trying to mitigate that lock-in, the potential lock-in of all these proprietary clouds that are around. Do you think we're going to see – because we've got OpenStack right now. Do you think we'll see eventually open standards winning out in the cloud, or how do you think it will go?
I think so. I mean, this isn't like the Linux desktop battle, right, where there was already incumbents there beforehand, and you're really fighting an uphill battle the whole way. I mean, this is really since the open source projects have embraced this concept from the very get-go, and it really is a concept. I mean, there's nothing proprietary in theory about cloud and the way cloud is deployed. I mean, I think it's very helpful that Amazon jumped on early and supported Linux distributions from the get-go. I think that, and actually in this case, Linux has had a distinct advantage in that it was able to adapt the way things work to a cloud ecosystem very quickly. And then, you know, later on, you've seen other players try to get in the game. So I think that Linux in general and open source has a distinct advantage here over the proprietary systems.
Yeah, I would definitely agree. And interestingly, very recently, we've seen in the news that VMware have actually joined the OpenStack Foundation, which seems like a strange marriage at first. But, I mean, even they're getting in there. So this stuff is really taking off, and the OpenStack movement and so on.
Right.
Oh, Kenan, so I'm going to do Randall's awkward transition for the week. We should look at who we've got coming up on the show. Randall will be back in the next week or so. And we've got some exciting shows coming up. So next week, we're going to be joined by... I'm going to get these names wrong, so I apologize in advance. Guillaume Binet and Tali Petrova, I hope I didn't get those two wrong, who are going to talk about Err Chatbot. That's E-R-R Chatbot, which is a plug-in chatbot that you can use for all kinds of different things. So that sounds quite cool. Following week, that will be the 14th. The following week, we've got Dwayne Bailey, who's going to come on and talk about Pootle, which is a web portal to enable translations, to help make translation easier, which sounds very cool. So we look forward to that. And then the following week, on the 21st of November, we've got David Mason coming on to talk to us about Zenata, which should be cool as well. If you have a look, if you go to twit.tv/floss, you'll see a link on our page there to our upcoming schedule. We have a spreadsheet that you can look at, which has all our upcoming guests on it. So if you go there and you have a look and you think there's a project missing that you'd really like to see, then the best thing you can do is contact the project leader yourself, or contact the project and have them email Randall, which is his address is merlin@stonehenge.com, and that's the easiest way to get to the top of our schedule list, so we can get them on and talk to them, because we always like to know what you guys want to hear about, what projects you want to see on the show. Okay then, so if you want to watch the show, you can do. You want to listen to the show, watch the show live. We tape at 8:30 a.m. Pacific time, and apart from my time zone mess ups, we should be fine for that time. And it's all live at live.twit.tv. if you want to head over there, we've got an IRC channel, which is at also over there. You can find details on the page, and we've got people chatting away right now in the IRC channel. You can find us on Twitter, Facebook, all those kind of places, Google+. So just have a look for Floss Weekly and come along and find us. Now, if you want to find anything about what I'm doing at the moment, you can head to my website, which is danlynch.org, where I've been writing about things like Android this week. I've been writing about pimping SMS on your Android phone. I still like SMS. I know it's a bit old-fashioned these days, but I still use SMS a lot. So Aaron, what have you got coming up?
Same thing. If you want to follow me, definitely check out, add me to your circles on Google+. That's the easiest way to actually start a discussion. If you just don't want to start a discussion, you just want to read what I have to say, you can also follow me on Facebook or Twitter. But Google+ is definitely the best way. I talk a lot about making things, Raspberry Pi, Android, Star Wars franchise being bought by Disney, all those kind of things. So if that's the kind of stuff you're interested in, Linux, open source, making stuff, definitely follow me on Google+.
Excellent. And thank you very much for joining us today, Aaron. It's always a pleasure. And it's great to finally do a show again together.
Yeah, definitely. I know you've been pretty busy lately, or it seems like anyway. So it's good to be back on together again. We don't get the chance very often when Randall's around. So it's kind of nice when he goes away. It's like, yeah, go ahead, Randall. I get to talk to interesting people like Dan and Simon last week. And so, yeah, it's fun.
Yeah, well, while the cat's away, the mice
will
play.
That's right.
As they say. Yeah. Not sure how Randall will feel about being compared to a cat, but there we go. Maybe he won't mind. So thank you very much for joining us for Floss Weekly, and we'll see you again for another Floss Weekly.